Progress, not perfection.
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 This is Radio Ravioli on WFMU with me, Olivia. We ended off the show with three tracks from Abby from Mars. We heard her song Misquote, Tap Dance Interlude, and Travel, all off her album, my second debut album. I really like Travel. I've heard her play that live, and then I was listening through my second debut album, and it's really impressive, inspiring. It's a That Abby, she is on Saturdays, midnight to 3 a.m. We had Jeremy Cunningham, Dustin Lorenzi, and Paul Bryan with Ray Tracing before that, off their album A Better Ghost. We heard a track off the compilation Viento Sur, experimental and fusion music from Argentina, put out by Vampisol Records. We had Padna with a collage album, Sad Songs, They Say So Much. You can see everything, it's online, wfmu.org. I don't have enough time, but I'm not going to get worried about it, reading through everything, because it's progress, not perfection. Mark Curse is coming up next, and he was just telling me that he's playing different clips from Tectonic over the years. It's 5 years of the show being on the air, and so Mark has been soliciting, your favorite bits that you've heard on his show over the years. Some of my favorite Mark Hurst shows, I liked when he interviewed Jenny Odell, who wrote the book How to Do Nothing, and he also interviewed The Walking Guy recently. Who is The Walking Guy? You know what I'm talking about, Mark? I'm talking to him, but he's like doing other things. Early on your show, you had the walker guy?
Oh, you're talking about my show, yeah. Paul Salopek.
Paul Salopek.
Yes, a National Geographic guy.
A National Geographic guy who walked around the world and talked about slowing down and walking and being away from your phone. Anyway, I'm cutting into your time and you've got a show to do. So it's WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County, 91.9 FM and online, wfmu.org.
Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I will be your host for the next hour here on WFMU, Freeform Station of the Nation, live from downtown Jersey City in the great state of New Jersey. It is a real honor to be with you this evening. The fifth anniversary of the first episode of Tectonic back in 2017. Actually, the fifth anniversary was yesterday, but we're going to call it 5 years today, since today is the Monday closest to that anniversary. It has been quite a ride, and what a privilege and an honor it has been for me, and continues to be for me, to be part of this amazing and unique and creative and really special community. And this is also the first day, really, of the new long season from fall 2022 through, I believe it's early June of 2023. That's the long season we've got here at WFMU that lasts 9 months. And so since I'm talking to you now, it indicates that Tectonic is going to remain in its slot for the next 9 months on Mondays from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, although you can listen to this show anytime you want. You can go to WFMU.org and go into the archives. All of the shows are there. You can also go to the one-page website at tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, and you can go into those same archives with slightly differently formatted links, but it's basically the same idea as the archives on the WFMU site. So this evening, we are going to be doing something special. I wanted to mark 5 years of this project, this Tectonic project that I'm so happy to be part of, by asking you, the listeners, to help me build the show. I have not done a milestone show like this since I did one for the 1 year anniversary 4 years ago. I was just so I was so euphoric that I made it through a year, and then for years 2, 3, and 4 I didn't. I think I mentioned it, but I didn't do anything. But I thought at year 5, this is a significant year, a significant milestone of a half decade. And this is show number 241 that I have hosted. I've also been very privileged to have some great guest hosts, including station manager Ken Friedman and DJ Scott Williams. A couple of weeks ago knocked it out of the park with his guest hosting, and a number of other great guest hosts over the years. But just my episodes that I have hosted, by my count, number as of this evening, 241. There have also been dozens of books that I have covered, and over 200 guests. There have been some shows without a guest, but most of them have had a guest. So those are some of the numbers: 5 years, 200 plus guests, and 241 episodes. And so in order to mark this moment, before we get back to our regular interview format next week, I'm planning an interesting interview for next week's show. I asked you, the listeners, to email me with a favorite of yours over the past 5 years. It could be any year, could be any episode, and it could be a favorite guest or a favorite theme or a favorite book or a favorite episode. Could be anything. And a number of you did write in, some just over some text emails only, and some included an audio message, which I'll be playing those as well. So thanks to all the listeners who contributed. My idea was I wanted this to be your choices for what I would play this evening rather than my choices. Although I am reserving one slot for my own choice later in the show. But why don't we get started? And I should say, by the way, if you want to join in the live listener chat, you can go to WFMU.org and click the link on the homepage that says Playlist and Comments. And if you've never done this before and you're listening live, why don't you give it a shot? You don't have to sign up and create an account. You can comment anonymously if you want. Just go to WFMU.org, click Playlists and Comments, and just say hi to the other listeners. I am not chatting yet because it is very difficult to chat on the chat board while I am talking on mic. But maybe I'll get a chance to say something on the chat board later. So that's where the comment board is. And you can also see some special images that I have posted for your amusement, as always, on the playlist. Okay, why don't we get started? I want to start with an email that I got from a longtime listener, Alex in Brooklyn. Thanks, Alex, for writing in. Alex writes, and again, this is Alex's answer to my invitation for listeners to send in a favorite of some sort over the past 5 years. Alex writes, the book-centric shows are the most educational and thought-provoking, but I've valued above all conversations with the creators of good, quote-unquote, good tech, whose companies or products are inspiring positive change. Those shows and your Tectonic booklet, that was one of the WFMU premiums that I did 1 year, a little printed booklet of tips. Those have provided some great actionable steps towards supporting causes and businesses. Thank you, Alex, and I'm so glad that the show has been helpful. One of my main goals on Tectonic has been to spotlight people and organizations that are affecting positive change. They're showing that there is an alternative to the big tech toxic model out there. You can do good things with technology. And Alex suggested three shows as examples of that, and I have little brief clips of each one of them. Why don't we start with a clip from the November 4, 2019 show. I had two of the organizers of something called NYC Mesh. This is a mesh network, I've talked about it a bunch of times on the show, that delivers high-speed internet access through point-to-point satellite dishes. Well, dishes, I'm not using the right terms, but basically on the roof there are these little dishes across different Brooklyn neighborhoods that have line-of-sight access to each other, and they create a mesh that that offers low-cost, high-speed internet access that does not involve the duopoly of Verizon and Charter and whatever each neighborhood has. Why don't we listen to Scott Rasmussen and Jillian Murphy from that November 4, 2019 show talking about NYC Mesh. What does it mean for someone who is signed on with NYC Mesh rather than, let's say, Verizon or Optimum? What does that mean?
Essentially, it just means you're joining a community of neighbors, residents, others in New York City to be able to come together to be your own internet service provider in many ways. We don't really like to use the word internet service providers in our community. We think of ourselves as a community network, but really believe that networks are formed when people come together in communities and seek to provide each other essential services or other sorts of support mechanisms. And we try to do that at NYC Mesh by procuring access to the internet, which these days, as you know, is one of the most fundamental sort of utilities in our day and age.
How is NYC Mesh positioned to deliver something that's more like an actual utility than a corporate service?
Well, just funny, when you were talking about Lyft, I was thinking like, oh, what, are you going to take a taxi or something? Because we have gone in this direction of privatization of all these utilities that we do need. The internet kind of got swept under the rug for maybe 20 or 30 years, and it was kind of this little side project that was going to happen, and now cities are realizing that they don't have really great infrastructure, at least over the last 15 years. I think cities haven't really been taking it all that seriously. So now we're really stuck with two, maybe in some areas of New York City, you're lucky to have four different providers, but usually it's more around the one or two selections, and it's become a monopoly in the city. They can charge whatever they want, they can give whatever speeds they want, and they don't have to, they can read your traffic, so we really don't have much freedom.
Okay, so you sign up, a team of volunteers shows up, and then they put the installation on the roof, and then that connects to other rooftop installations that's the mesh idea.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, and so Scott, that's what you were saying before about neighbors actually relying on one another, right? Because everyone is a node in the mesh of NYC Mesh. What does that mean for the resilience of the network? If one of the nodes goes down, if lightning hits one of the buildings, what happens to the internet access to the mesh?
Sure. That actually, in many ways, it makes you a lot more resilient. And that's kind of the theory behind mesh networks and why there's been a real turn in interest in that. Your node is likely not just connected with one neighbor, but likely connected with many. So if an issue occurs in one direction of your traffic, then you can find your way out. Your traffic can find its way out through another means.
And that was NYC Mesh volunteers Scott Rasmussen and Jillian Murphy talking about how NYC Mesh works, how it's installed, and why it's important to have an alternative that is resilient and non-surveilling as a choice that people have not to use something like a Verizon or an Optimum. Let's go to the next clip that Alex in Brooklyn pointed out, or rather a clip that I have chosen from the show that he pointed to. This is June 15, 2020. I had Jason Fried, co-founder of Basecamp, talking about launching a new email service called Hey.com. Once again, this is to Alex in Brooklyn's point that he appreciates when Tectonic has spotlighted alternative tools and platforms not made by big tech companies. And this email service called Hey is a good example. So here is Jason Fried from June 15, 2020 on Tectonic.
Someone can send you an email today. And by the simple act of opening that email, the person who sent it to you can learn, first of all, whether or not you opened it or not, how many times you opened it, how often you read it, how long you spent reading it, what kind of computer or phone you had. I mean, maybe both if you've opened it in two different places. They can also get your IP address, which can reveal some physical location information. All of that by simply opening an email, and you as the person who opened it has no idea whatsoever that they've just learned all of that about you, and you also have no control over that. To me, that should be illegal, but it's not today, and no one even knows it's happening. I mean, some people do, but most do not, absolutely most do not. And they'd be shocked to find out that it's pervasive and widespread. So with Hey, if you use Hey to read your email, we will block, it's probably 98% of people who are tracking you right now. It's impossible to be 100%, but we're trying to get as close as we can. From them, you can read the email, but they'll never know that you read it. They'll never get any personal identifying information. We're even proxying all the images. So they will get an IP address, but it'll be our IP address and not yours, kind of like a VPN might work. So, you know, we're doing the best we possibly can to make sure that there's no surveillance, certainly none, zero by us, and also as little as possible by anybody else. And it's just a really important thing for us to do.
Okay, so that was Jason Fried from Hey.com talking about how why it's so important to have an email service that does not or that strips out the surveillance that is endemic to emails these days. Surveillance has been a primary topic or theme of Tectonic over the last 240 episodes, and for good reason. Most of the business models in Silicon Valley seem to be built on this idea that companies will gain as much information, private information on you as they can without your knowledge or consent and without any opportunity for appeal for you, the citizen, to ask them to stop doing it or to delete what they have. And so naturally, there are companies that have brought about companies and individuals who've tried to launch products to do something about that problem. And in addition to Jason Fried, another individual who I had on the show who's trying to do something about it is a guy named Scott Urban, who started his career as an eyeglass frame designer. He'd make these beautiful hand-built frames. And then he launched something called Reflecticles. Longtime listeners will remember this. They're these special anti-surveillance glasses that do not allow infrared scanning to occur on your pupils. It blocks those wavelengths. And on the Tectonic show from June 24, 2019, Scott Urban walked us through how Reflecticles work. This is the third show that Alex in Brooklyn was recommending to us. And I have a little clip from Scott Urban from that show, June 24, 2019, talking about reflecticles.
And I think we're coming to a place where to consider one's own privacy is not considered a negative thing. It's actually just going to be part of our lives as we go on. And do we want it? I mean, the old, I don't care, I got nothing to hide. Nope, you know, that was pushed on people and they adopted it. My main thing is when corporations start getting into it, I'm actually less concerned about government surveillance than I am corporate surveillance, because I've met quite a few people who have clearances, and I'm like, all right, go ahead, man. Then what I think is more interesting is how corporations are basically going to use people as data mining, and just every single interaction that a person has with a product or even just walking down the street will reflect their, you know, information on a particular individual. And that will allow them to either sell something or perpetuate something that's making you want to keep on being closed up in this system of continually buying something or being tracked or, you know, and to me, I don't know the end game of what they're playing on this, but they're certainly going in a direction where they want to know everything about you at all times. And I would like to opt out of that system.
I would like to opt out of that system, Scott Urban says, and I have to agree with Scott. I'd like to opt out of that as well. Unfortunately, the misbehavior from Silicon Valley is not limited to unwarranted, opaque surveillance on all of us. Occasionally, it goes into outright criminal activity, and I've covered a number of these criminal incidents in the past. Many to most of the incidents of criminal behavior that I have observed, and some of which I've talked about on the show, have gone without any kind of punishment. I mean, how many Silicon Valley executives have you seen in handcuffs being marched off to jail? Not many. I would say it's probably zero. And I've covered multiple times a number of observers, one or two of whom are in Silicon Valley, who are trying to do the right thing, who've said, we need more prosecution of crime coming from the top levels of Silicon Valley companies. And one of these crimes that got a little bit of prosecution, a little bit of notice, although the CEO, I believe, was not charged. My opinion is he probably should have been, but it was the story of eBay. And this came up due to the email from, I'm just going to say their name is Listener P. I'm not going to say their name. But Listener P writes that they like the eBay story. Quote, I get surveillance capitalism and I hate it, especially the Link NYC, which we cannot escape, which is those are the Google surveillance towers I've covered multiple times. P continues, but they took it to a whole nother level with the stalking, talking about eBay's stalking. Now, what happened was a few years ago, there's the Steiners, this husband and wife team in Natick, Massachusetts, had a website, they may still have it, wrote stories about the good and the bad of online commerce. And eBay was a frequent subject. Sometimes eBay did something good, sometimes eBay did something bad, but eBay decided that they did not like any criticism from this rather obscure website in Natick, Massachusetts. And this made it all the way up to the CEO. The CEO could not stand that his company, eBay, was being criticized by a husband and wife writing a website on the East Coast. And so they decided to do something about it. eBay leadership at the very, very top of the company decided to do something about it. And if you haven't heard this show, go back after this and go back and listen to the whole show from June 22, 2020. There's a link to it on the playlist so you can get to it easily. I'm just going to play you a little clip of it so you can see what Listener P was referring to in recommending that we listen to this. Here it is, a little clip from the June 22, 2020 show about eBay. Here it is. Because of what transpired after this, And it's now a matter of federal record. There is an investigation ongoing, which I'll get to. We now have the transcript of communications between these two guys. And I just want to read you the text that the CEO of eBay sent to his chief communications officer. Here's what the text said, and I'm not editing this. This is a verbatim read of what the text was. Quote, "If we are ever going to take her down, now is the time." That was the CEO of eBay. And in response, because they're texting and emailing back and forth, Steve Weimer, the chief communications officer, writes back to his boss, the CEO. And Weimer says, quote, "We are going to crush this lady." And then he writes, "Anything we can do to solve it should be explored, whatever it takes." And that's each of those three words with a period at the end. You know how people write that sometimes. Whatever it takes. Here, Weimer is showing emphasis that he is going to take the CEO's instructions and, as how did the CEO put it, take her down. That's what Weimer is going to do. He's going to take her down, whatever it takes. And that commenced a multi-phase process where senior leadership at eBay planned and then carried out an ongoing campaign of harassment and intimidation against Ina Steiner and her husband. If you heard anything about the story, you probably heard just in the headlines that the eBay leadership began by mailing horrifying or disgusting or scary or threatening items to Ina Steiner and her husband at their personal home in Natick, Massachusetts. So these included, I just want to underline again, this is for real. This is what eBay executives, some of the top executives in Silicon Valley, were spending their time actually physically sending to the Steiners at their personal house to intimidate them because the Steiners criticized Silicon Valley's operations. The eBay executives sent them fly larvae, live spiders, a Halloween mask that looks like a bloody pig's face. And just to put a not too fine point on it, the eBay executives sent the Steiners a funeral wreath, and they also sent a book on surviving the death of a spouse. The message here was inescapable. You know, much like we said, Apple is acting like a mafioso shaking down third-party developers who are just trying to do a good job. Here, eBay was sending items related to death, a funeral wreath and the book about surviving the death of the spouse, basically saying, we are going to come out and we're going to get one of you. Now, they didn't sign these. They didn't say who these were from. But I think the Steiners had a decent idea because eBay was one company that they had recently criticized. It's not a particular mystery that Silicon Valley oligarchs do not like being criticized, but I don't think anyone expected that eBay leadership would take it quite this far, except, of course, that the CEO had directed them to do this. So the Steiners are looking at this stuff. They're, I'm sure, feeling terrified and harassed and intimidated. And then the eBay executives put in the next phase of their plan. They get on a plane and they fly. And this, again, friends, I'm not making this up. eBay executives fly from Silicon Valley to the Boston airport and then drive out in a rental car to Natick, Massachusetts, onto the Steiner Street and park outside their house. And I'm going to clip that there because there's a good deal more to say about that story, but this is not an episode about eBay. But you can listen to that entire episode if you go to WFMU.org and find the archives and go back to that June 22nd show from 2020. I covered a bunch of stories in that. That was kind of a news roundup, but the eBay story was the main one from that episode that people have talked about to me since. And so thank you to listener P for pointing that out as an example of the egregious behavior that is, friends, I got to tell you, is a lot more common than you would think. in Silicon Valley at the very highest levels of these companies. Okay, let's move on. Speaking of surveillance, someone on the chat board was saying that they have gotten back into eBay recently and there's a lot more tracking than there used to be on eBay. And I don't think that is unique to eBay. I think that is across Silicon Valley. They are just doubling and tripling down on surveillance. And as I said earlier, surveillance has been a primary enduring theme of this show. And one of the examples, because I like to localize this to New York and New Jersey, both because a lot of the listeners are from this geographic area, but also because this area is a leading indicator in a lot of ways for what's going to happen in the rest of the country and the world. So even if you don't live near New York City, you live elsewhere in the U.S. or you live in a different country, I still think it's relevant to talk about what we're facing here on the streets of Manhattan and elsewhere. And one of the things that always comes to mind as I walk on the street in Manhattan are these Google surveillance towers that are 9 feet, 8 or 9 feet tall, 9 feet tall, I believe. They're called Link NYC, and they have three hidden cameras on them and a number of other sensors that have never been fully divulged to the public. And they are feeding all kinds of data back to Google headquarters and on request, and we don't know what the conditions for request are, to law enforcement as well. Who knows if there is some sort of packaging and analysis of the metadata that Google is making use of as well. Of course, Link NYC will deny all of this. No. We're very focused on privacy. We would never think of involving ourselves in surveillance capitalist business models, which is what pays the bills for our corporate parent, which is called Alphabet. Never. I'm shocked. So the most recent episode that I have covered in the sad, tawdry, failing, and really disturbing history of the Link NYC project is the most recent launch, which is this thing called Link 5G. These are 32-foot high towers. Outside the U.S., that is almost 10 meters high. So it's between 9 and 10 meters high. There are these giant surveillance poles that the company says, oh, don't worry, we're just providing free 5G access to everyone, nothing else. There is a camera, but it's hardly ever on, and there's definitely no other surveillance sensors in these things. Why would you even ask? And you can go back, this is a recent show from August 22nd, go back and look at the playlist and see a photo of this thing from the Bronx that's standing there right now, 10 meters high and surveilling the neighborhood, although that's not what the city says. The city says, oh, we work with unnamed partners. We're not going to tell you what Google's involvement is, and it may or may not have other surveillance going. But no, it's definitely not about surveillance. Well, from Hellgate, journalist Molly Osberg did a great job in covering the story, and I spoke with Molly just a couple of weeks ago. This is from listener Steve, who writes, it's eye-opening, talking about Tectonic, it's eye-opening, and it also seems sad, but I'm glad you continue to be a watchman on the wall for things like this. And I thank you, Steve, but really the credit goes to the journalists and authors, people like Molly Osberg, who are on the ground doing the research. I'm just happy to play a part spotlighting their excellent work. So here's Molly Osberg from August 22nd, just a few weeks ago, talking about Link 5G.
I mean, I just think that it's notable, and I did say this in the piece, that as of March 2020, the city of New York was thinking about taking legal action against City Bridge for defaulting on millions and millions of dollars of promised revenue to the city. And I think that the big question here, in addition to all of this surveillance stuff, is like, why on earth the city decided to completely reverse course and, you know, just sink even more resources into a project that had so phenomenally failed?
Because of what? And that's a really good question. Why is the company still sinking money into a project that has failed so spectacularly that the city just a few months ago was about to sue the company for breach of contract, for not delivering any revenue anywhere near what they had promised? Well, instead, the city has, again, doubled and tripled down on this surveillance infrastructure, which is a pattern that we see everywhere. Even though people may not want it, there may not be a good business case for it. There may be a string of failures in its wake in previous iterations. Both governments and companies seem determined to double down on this idea of launching and installing as much surveillance infrastructure as they can. And, you know, the time to resist this stuff is as soon as it goes up. Once it gets fully installed, it's very difficult. It's like a rhizome. It's very difficult to remove this root system of parasitic surveillance infrastructure. So I'm hoping that there's a group out there that is beginning to look further into this, using Molly Osberg's excellent journalism as a starting point. Why is the city using our tax money to pay for this failing project that is surveilling New York citizens? Why? Is there any public comment that the city has about this? And go back. I'm not going to play it now because this is not a show about Link 5G, but I'll just say I played on that episode on August 22nd a bit of the press conference, including the new mayor, Eric Adams, and his chief technology officer fielding a question: will these polls surveil New York citizens? And there, I'm just going to paraphrase. This is not an exact quote, but essentially, just paraphrasing, their answer was, and that was about it. It's not very confidence-inspiring. I'll put it like that. Let me go to a lighter topic, shall I? Something that is not so depressing, but is actually kind of fun, but it's still about surveillance, keeping with the surveillance theme. I told you at the beginning of the show, by the way, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic on WFMU. My name is Mark Hurst, and we're going through some clips of shows requested by listeners as their favorites over the past 5 years. Yes, we are celebrating the five-year anniversary of Tectonic this evening. And I reserved, as I said at the beginning of the show, one slot for myself. I hope that's okay. I'm a listener, too, so I get one vote. And I would like to play one of my favorites. This is a definite favorite of mine from the past 5 years. And it's something recent, but this has never been played on Tectonic before. So this is a premiere for Tectonic. It's been played, well, I take it back. It has been played on Tectonic, but not when I was hosting. There's your hint. I told you that DJ Scott Williams did a fantastic job of guest hosting Tectonic just a couple of weeks ago. And he played a song at the beginning of his show that I've been saving until the five-year anniversary because it's so special. Because putting this song together has been one of my favorite things around Tectonic for the past 5 years. I worked with Scott Williams, who really deserves the lion's share of the credit. He really put in a lot of work to make this song happen. What we did is we took a familiar song and we changed the lyrics a little bit so it was thematically a thematic fit with Tectonic. And I also want to say thanks to Greg from Zone 5, who's on the comment board and has done such a great job of designing Tectonic logos and t-shirts over the years, including this year's distracted cell phone user walking off of a cliff. And also Matt Fiveash, who hosts the great Weekly World Blues, and Lily Wen as well did the audio engineering on this down in Monty Hall. But especially I want to say thanks to Scott Williams, who helped write the lyrics and put the band together and sang with me. And so with that as quite a bit of a lead up, let me play you this song that we're calling Cymark and Scott Funkel. It's a song called Sounds of Surveillance. And putting this song together was one of my favorite things of the last 5 years. And this is a premiere for a hosted by me Tectonic show. I hope you enjoy it. Here we go.
Hello, Siri, my old friend. You've come to spy on me again. Because the websites that I've been browsing give you insight into my thinking. paranoia that you planted in my brain still remains within the sound of surveillance. I saw 3 billion people, maybe more. People texting without speaking, people swiping without reading, people monitored by devices that never care. No one dare disturb the sound of surveillance, and the people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made, and the screen flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming, and the screen said the billions in profits are written in the smartphone apps like Google Maps, whispered in the sounds of surveillance.
And that was The Sounds of Surveillance by Cy Mark and Scott Funkel, with a great big thanks to Scott Williams, also Greg Harrison, Lily Wen, and Matt Fiveash for helping put that together. I was obviously singing the Paul Simon part, and Scott Williams was singing the Art Garfunkel part, and it was a tremendous amount of fun and one of my favorite things of the last 5 years on Tectonic. And stay tuned, you know, because we are talking about other things that we may be able to do along those lines. But thanks to Scott for helping me put that together. We are going through some of the favorites of listeners, and that was my one vote that I got to have for the show. But let's get back to other listeners, some of their favorites from Tectonic over the past 5 years. And I want to play one of the audio pieces. This is from listener Catherine talking about her one of her favorites. Over the last 5 years, and it's a particular show when I was not interviewing a guest, but one of those sort of news roundups with a particular theme. And in this case, it was 10 reasons to smash your smartphone. And here is what Catherine had to say about that show.
Hi, Mark. This is your dedicated listener, Catherine M., and my preferred show was from September 20th, 2021, 10 Reasons to Smash Your Smartphone, which I found stirring, instructive, and absolutely hilarious. I listened to it several times. Thank you so much for your shows, and keep them coming.
Thank you so much, Catherine. And now let's go ahead and listen to a little bit of that show. And this, is, by the way, is going to be the stand-in for all of the many rants I've had over the years. I know there's been a topic that we've talked about, to rant or not to rant. Well, this was one where I had to say something due to what had just come out about Instagram that week. So this is from the Smash Your Smartphone episode from September 20, 2021 on Tectonic. I mean, you could ask, why is the Wall Street Journal running this as front page news when it's been known for a while? The reason is the Wall Street Journal reporters uncovered internal documents that showed Facebook leadership knows that Instagram is harmful. They know that it's harming teenage girls.
and they do it anyway because it's growth at any cost. It's profit above all else. There's one value there, and it's money. And if it harms teenage girls, millions of them, that's fine. Keep it going. Smash your smartphone and get rid of Instagram.
Okay, so that was the idea in that 10 reasons to smash a smartphone. I played a giant explosion at the end of each one of those reasons. So that's kind of a fun show. Again, you can go to WFMU.org and go into the archives, or go to tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, or just go to the playlist of this evening's show. This is the September 12th, 2022 show, and the links are right there to each of these shows that I am running clips of, thanks to listeners for pointing them out. Let's go next to longtime listener Herb.nyc, who had some nice words. Here is Herb.
Hi, Mark. Congratulations on your five-year anniversary. You asked for what we like about Tectonic, and I'll keep it simple. It's your emphasis on reading and shopping. Not very tech-oriented, right? You remind us that there is so much joy and knowledge in books, magazines, and newspapers, and in walking into a bookstore and a library. May more seminary co-op bookstores bloom. And shopping, it should be fun, easy, and harmless. But Amazon has ruined the experience with its unsafe work conditions and imperialist tactics. Thanks for talking about these and more, Mark. It is very much appreciated.
Thank you so much, Herb.nyc. Again, we are hearing from listeners who chose a favorite over the past 5 years as we're having a listener-led celebration of Tectonic's five-year anniversary this evening. Let's go to Rolly in Queensland, Australia, who had a nice message. Not a particular show, but a very nice message from Australia. Here's Rolly.
Good evening, everyone. This is Rolly from Queensland, Australia, a regular Tectonic listener. What I appreciate is the consistency and dedication with which Mark shares his knowledge and enlightenment. Thank you, Mark, for all the good times on the Tectonic radio show. Stay well, pal, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Rolly. It's great to have listeners all over the world, including in Australia. And yes, you have been on the comment board many times, and I appreciate that. For anyone who is listening, either live or in the future, who's not familiar with the comment board, this is one of the great aspects of WFMU. Every show has a live comment board. It's not algorithmically determined. There's no hidden nudges to get people to start fighting. It's just a nice community of good people who are enjoying the music, and often the conversations go off on tangents, and it feels like it's a real community of people sitting and getting to know each other and catching up as they're listening to music, or in this case, talk and or rants. So thanks to Rolly for being a part of that. And the comment board is still on for this evening's show. It's at WFMU.org. Click playlist and comments. For a text-only submission, we got a nice, speaking of longtime listeners, we got a nice note from Handy Haversack, who's also on this evening. Hello, Handy. And Handy writes, one moment does stick out because WFMU is, first of all, a place for music and music lovers. So here Handy is saying he doesn't have one particular Tectonic episode, but he does think of one WFMU moment that has to do with Tectonic. He continues, when the news broke about Bandcamp's acquisition by Chinese venture capitalists, and you first posted a comment on and then were brought in to speak to listeners on Evan Funk Davies' show, which, friends, you should know about this. And longtime Evan Funk Davies listeners and fans know that he has a section of his show where he plays an air horn. And I don't have an air horn here, but all of you should be listening to EFD's show. It's on Wednesdays from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern. It's a great show. I've loved this show for years. Anyway, let me get back to Handy Haversack. Quote, that was the perfect expression of Tectonic and WFMU as a service and guardian of its listeners, able to address immediate and important concerns and provide a voice that continues to question the verities
that we're supposed to merely accept, accede to, pay for, and submit our lives to. Well said, Handy. And so what happened there was, as Handy said, the day the news broke that Bandcamp was being bought by this Chinese company, Evan went on, he had a mic break, he went on air and said something about this, and I chimed in on the comment board, speaking of the comment board, and said that I was not happy with this, and Evan put me on air, you know, 3 minutes later, and we had a spot interview right there, live, on live radio, about news that was just breaking, and of course it was a real honor for me to be on Evan's show. But I agree with Handy. This is the ethic of WFMU, that we have a community and we're responding to what's really happening in the world. People are really engaged with important topics, like what's going to happen to Bandcamp. I am, as longtime listeners know, I'm no fan of Spotify or the other streaming services. I was a fan of Bandcamp, and oh, go back and listen. You can listen to that interview that I did with Evan, or the interview I did not long ago about Bandcamp here on Tectonic itself. And the long and short of it is, it's going pretty well so far. So we'll see. So I still use Bandcamp, but I've got an eye on it. Finally, I want to play one last clip, and this is from DJ Paradox's favorite show, which he has said for years is his favorite show. And it is a show, it was one of the first few episodes, I think it was number 7 or something. It was in the fall of 2017. It was about 5 years ago. And I had a show about Jolly Roger Telephone Company. I was interviewing its founder, this guy named Roger Anderson, and what this company did, and I think it still does, is that when telemarketers call, you can put a live voice chatbot on the line to talk to the telemarketer, and then you can just put your phone on mute or something and let the bot do the work of wasting the time of the telemarketer. And the footage you can then share with Jolly Roger, and then this company will publish some of the funnier excerpts. So anyway, this is one of those examples. A telemarketer calls someone's phone, and they put on this voice bot that I think is actually voiced by Roger Anderson himself. But it's all automated. There's no person speaking really to the telemarketer, and the telemarketer is not aware that they are speaking to a robot, essentially. I find this very amusing, and you can go back and listen to other excerpts from the October 23rd, 2017 show, but let's listen to this one. This is called Sharon, the Google Specialist.
Hello.
Hi, this is Sharon, your local Google Specialist. We have a front page...
Wait, is this a real person?
...business like yours, and can guarantee front page placement with unlimited...
Hello.
Your call is being transferred to an account specialist now and may be monitored and
Hello.
Recorded for quality assurance and training purposes.
Hello.
Thank you for holding. This is Kevin. Can I get started with your first name, please?
Hello.
Yes, hello. How are you doing today?
Yes.
Yes, would you like to have your business listed on the front result page of Google, Yahoo, and Bing?
Yeah.
Great. And I'm speaking to a business owner, correct?
Yeah.
And I didn't get your name.
Okay, so I just woke up from a nap, and I'm kind of groggy. So can you maybe start over a little slower?
I'm sorry. No, I was saying, did you want to have your business listed on the front result page of Google, Yahoo, and Bing?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and are you looking for local or national exposure?
Yeah.
Are you looking for local or national?
Yeah.
Yeah, what? Uh-huh. Which one is it? Local or national?
You know what? I was just finishing up an email, and I missed that part. Can you say that again?
Would you like to have your business listed on the front result page of Google, Yahoo, and Bing?
Right.
Excuse me?
Yes?
Yes?
Oh, hang on. There's a bee on me. Hang on. There's a bee on my arm. Okay. You keep talking, but I'm going to stay quiet because this bee is freaking me out. Go ahead.
Are you looking for local or national exposure?
Uh-huh.
So which one, local or national?
Yeah.
So local or national?
Yeah. Okay, it's still
which
in my arm.
It?
It's just crawling around, but it's not upset, I guess, but I'm afraid to touch it. So you keep talking. I'm just going to stay quiet.
Right, I just need to ask a few questions before we even get into it, and then I'll start talking.
Uh-huh.
So did you want local or national exposure, sir?
Uh-huh. Okay, it's gone. So the bee is gone, and I was not really listening during that part. So when the bee was on my arm, I guess I wasn't really listening to you. Can you start over during the bee thing? What was that?
Are you looking for local or national exposure?
Mm-hmm.
Which one is it? Is there a bear on top of you now?
Uh-huh.
Is there a bear on you now?
Oh, yes! Did you see that? Oh, man, are you watching the game? No, you're probably not watching the game. I don't even know where you are. McAllister just scored. I think that's it for the game. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead. I'm listening now.
You have a great day, sir, okay? I think you're having too much fun with yourself right now.
Yeah.
Okay, have a great day.
Okay. Well, have a great day. I love that clip from Jolly Roger because the telemarketer was having fun too. I mean, at some point he knew his time was being wasted, but it's not clear that he ever figured out it was a robot, but he was playing along by the end, you know. Is there a bear with you too? So, everybody wins. The telemarketer's time is wasted, and yet he has a good time at the same time. Thanks to DJ Paradox for suggesting that show from October 23rd, 2017 as his favorite along the way of these 5 years of Tectonic that we are celebrating this evening. And before I go into the final outro song, I just want to say to Jim Price, where is my free snowblower? Where is it? I mean, he said he was going to send me a free snowblower. Sorry. If you've been listening since this afternoon, you know that Jim Price, who does this great one-minute show on Wednesdays from 3 p.m. to 3:01 p.m. before Olivia takes over for Radio Ravioli, today Jim Price was playing his side of a conversation that purportedly he had with me over the phone as I was complaining about being taken in by a Nigerian email scam, and that I am still in search of a free snowblower that the scammer promised me. See, that's why I needed Jolly Roger, the email version, to waste that scammer's time rather than getting roped in, but I still would like that free snowblower. Actually, I don't want a snowblower. It's all a joke. But that's that's what's so great about WFMU. You never know where it's going to go next because this is not scripted, and this is authentic. It's real. It's a community. This place is not driven by the growth at any cost ethic that we get from the giants out in Silicon Valley. And you may say, well, why, Mark, do you continue the show? This is a rather small station, and compared to some of these celebrity podcasts, these big technology podcasts, I mean, you just have a tiny fraction of the audience. And I say, I never got into this for any kind of quantity, any kind of competition with those big boosters who are doing these press release podcasts for these tech companies. I did this to be a part of this great community, and what a privilege it has been for 5 years to be here with you. And I want to say thanks to all of you, the listeners, for your encouragement and your support over the years. Thanks to station manager Ken Friedman for bringing me on the air 5 years ago. Thanks to DJ Erwin Chusett for being the first person to suggest to me that I might look into having a show. Thanks to Ruth Haydock, Ruth in the booth, for helping so much during the pandemic. Oh, that was a tough time, and Ruth was a lifesaver for all of us, really, all of us, DJs and hosts. And again, thanks to all of you who have listened over the years, and I just hope I can continue to do a good job and
tell you the truth. And that's all I'm trying to do, is tell you the truth about how technology is affecting us these days. And that's really the goal of this show, and has been for 5 years, and will continue for the however long I stay on. And it looks like it's going to be for at least 9 more months. This is a really important project that we're all a part of, trying to tell the truth about the biggest, most powerful companies in the world. There's so few places where we can hear the truth and discuss the truth and hold these companies to account. And I only hope that we can grow this, not in some quantitative size, but in the quality of the community and the message, so that we can get through this together. You've been listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Until next time, friends, you know what to do. Avoid Amazon and Apple. Forget Facebook. And whatever you do, get off Google. Stay tuned for Dust on the Decks with Derek here on WFMU.
This is Derek Peter, bringing you Dust on the Decks. Old time, country, Americana, folk, and beyond. You just heard Bobby McMillan. I'm sorry to say we lost Bobby recently. He passed away November 28th at the age of 69. Bobby was a resident of Selo, North Carolina, and was a tale teller, singer, educator, tradition bearer, and good friend. What I liked about Bobby so much is that even though he was such a performer and had learned so many of these songs through oral tradition, he was also just as much of a ballad nerd as me and was always emailing me asking me to get him this or that song out of this or that repository. So, it's a heavy heart today that I begin our show. That was Bobby doing a song that he composed the melody to, but he had gotten the text from J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings books, so anytime that there was a song in those Lord of the Rings books from Tolkien, he would look at the text and make up a melody and sing it for himself. And that was one that I recorded in May of 2021 when I had my last visit with Bobby. We've got some more Bobby coming up, some older recordings of him that have come out on compilations. This is him doing a song I like called Locks and Bolts. After that, we've got him doing Darby's Ram. Here we go.
I dreamed a dream the other night. All in my arms I had her. But when I woke, it was a joke. I was forced to lie without her. Her yeller hair, like streams of gold, was lying on the pillow. She's the prettiest thing, I love her so well. I'll follow the railroad after. I followed on to her uncle's house, inquiring of such a fair one. They answered, sir, there's no such here. And why do you inquire about her? But when she heard her true love's voice, she hastened to the window. Says, I freely would come to you, my love, but the locks and the bolts do hinder. As I stood there all in a maze, all in those pains and humors, my patience flew, my sword I drew, and quickly I went to her. I taken her by her lily-white hand, I led her over hills and valleys. Sing, come all young men who love like me, take one and fight the other.
I'm going to sing you just a little bit of one that that I learned from Granny Dale over in Madison and Uncle Kaz Wallen. Don't remember exactly where they learned it. Growing up over the years, but back in the early days of this century, there were a lot of logging going on, and a lot of times folks would be gone off for months at a time and come back, and they'd be singing new songs, and people in the community would learn them along with the ones that they'd had passed along. And I'm not sure exactly where this had come from, but they used to sing this, if I'm getting the right key of it. As I went down to Darby, all on one market day, there I spied the biggest ram that ever were fed on hay. To my faw, diddle day. Now the wool on this ram's back, it were so very high, the eagles built their nest in it, for I heard the young ones cry. To my fa-diddle-day. Now the wool on this ram's belly, it growed down to the ground. The devil cut it off, and he made himself a gown. To my fa-diddle-day. Now this ram's head were as big as Noah's Ark. A dog run up its nostrils and turned around and barked. To my fa-diddle-day. Now this ram had 4 feet, 4 feet on which to stand. When it set them on the ground, they measured a mile around. To my fa-diddle-day. Now this ram had its horns that reach up to the moon. A man went up in January and didn't get back till June. To my fa-diddle-day. Now this ram's horns, they grew so fur apart, it took a crow a month or two to fly from horn to horn. To my fa-diddle-day. Now this ram had a tooth that were holler as a horn, and when they took the measure, it held a barrel of corn. To my fa-diddle-day. Now the man who cut this ram's throat, he stood knee-deep in blood, and the man that held the vessel got washed away in the flood. To my fa-diddle-day. Now the blood from this ram, sir, run 40 miles or more, it turned